Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another episode of the Speak the Truth podcast. I've got a special episode for you today. Today, I'm being joined by Chuck Holton and Daron Kadar. Both of these men are famous in their own right. Go ahead, say hello, Daron, and then we'll get Chuck up there as well.
Hi. How's it going, y'all? Everybody who's listening. Great to be a part of this amazing podcast. We're going to get into it.
Chuck, sir.
Yeah, if you just came over for my podcast that I just finished, you're going to want to stick around for this one because we've got some really damning evidence that blows the lid off of this supposed scandal with GHF. So stick around.
So he's not lying. Currently holding in my hand right now is the proof, and I just got it about 5 minutes before we went live. I've got the proof, and I'm now confident that I can tell you that Tony Aguilar lied. He lied through his teeth. He lied about the tank shooting the vehicle, and he lied about the children. He lied about kids being gunned down by machine guns. He lied. Plain and simple, period, end of discussion. It's in black and white. It's in writing. He lied. He also lied about getting fired. He claims that he resigned. Well, guess what? That's also in black and white and in his own words. Gentlemen, are you even the least bit surprised that I can say that right now?
No, not at all.
After seeing the evidence on our previous call, there's no question in my mind.
There's none. There's none. And we're going to talk about some of the accusations that he's made. And, you know, Chuck, you yourself have been in Gaza, and Daron, just to, in case people are not familiar with you, you yourself are also an Israeli Special Forces soldier, correct?
That's correct.
Would you mind sharing with the people what you shared with me before we even get into all of this, before we went live? I thought it was really special, and I want to give you the opportunity, because inside the United States Army, inside of the infantry, when I went through Ranger School, when I went SF, never before did I receive a document such as you guys carry and you guys take to heart. If you wouldn't mind, I'm going to give you the floor, sir.
Yeah. So one of the claims that I saw by Tony Aguilar on his multiple interviews was that the IDF does not have discipline when it comes to arms, when it comes to civilians, when it comes to hurting civilians and committing war crimes, essentially is what he accuses of. And so I immediately, knowing our code of conduct, being recently in the Gaza Strip, recently operating within the vicinity of the GHF in doing some of our missions, I was actually shocked to hear him say that. And it was sad because, you know, this document right here that I told you about, this is what we receive on day one in boot camp. Before you even get to the unit you're going to end up in, this is the first thing that you get. It's called Ruach Tzal. That's the spirit of the IDF. This document, it's laminated. It has, and it's a little fine print. So today at my age, I have to actually wear glasses to read it. But this is actually something I've carried with me from day one. And it's because it reminds me of what I'm fighting for. It reminds me what the ethics of the IDF are, part of which is that you will respect your fellow man. You will have respect for your enemy and their honor. In other words, you are not allowed to use your weapon to dishonor your enemy even. And so, yeah, I found it very, very sad to hear Mr. Aguilar making these crazy claims about the IDF and really dragging our name under, in the mud, if you like. And I can tell you that based on his eyewitness accounts against us, it's what he said he saw. So I can't contradict him, although thanks to some good friends of ours that connected us with people who were there, we have some damning evidence to the contrary of what he said. And that's thanks to the some really good friends of mine that reached out to me and then connected me with one of the operators, contractors, who were with Tony at the time. And I witnessed the false claims that he made, which, of course, you're going to share here. Since, Matthew, you've also done a deep dive and you've come up with some very, very damning evidence.
Yeah, I did. And until I redact the messages, because this individual wants to remain anonymous, so I have to go through and I have to redact his name, but I will be releasing those publicly. I will read from them, potentially here. I haven't made up my mind yet. But first, I'd like to give Tony the opportunity to be a truthful human being and actually recant and be honest for once. And if he doesn't, and he refuses to be honest, he will be embarrassed. He's already been shadow banned, per se, by the SF community. And this is not going to do him any favors. I could promise him that. And I would be surprised if he doesn't have a massive lawsuit coming his way after this from GHF themselves. And for those of you that have followed me over on X, and you've seen some of the information that I've released recently about GHF and their funding, it might be kind of odd to you that maybe I'm releasing questionable information about GHF while at the same time bringing up Tony Aguilar being a liar. But there's a reason I'm doing it, and it's something that myself, Daron, and I think Chuck, we've all kind of talked about, which is the truth is good enough. The truth is good enough. And Daron, before I get over to Chuck, I just want to ask you, when he brought these lies out, as a member of IDSSF, knowing that the IDF has bailed out these contractors under GHF, both UG Solutions and SRS, did you feel like betrayed? Because that's actually what happened in one of these instances, is that the IDF responded. Tony was actually on the ground that day, and their actions saved his butt.
That's exactly how I felt. I felt like a stab in the back because maybe he doesn't know this. I mean, it's possible, but I doubt he doesn't know this. That if it was not for the IDF that is conducting constant reconnaissance over all of the GHF sites in Gaza, providing them with security from above, with intelligence, with the military that intervenes when needed. I know for a fact, because we've been briefed, that our military engaged multiple times on multiple attempts against the GHF positions. The number one threat was that they wanted to either basically unalive one of the operators and or kidnap them and take them hostage. That's what Hamas was intending to do and is still intending to do with the operators there, because it's a direct threat to Hamas's control of the masses, because their weapon is hunger. And it, like the opening scene in Black Hawk Down, I think that's a perfect illustration of what's going on in Gaza right now. So the only difference is that the world is condemning Israel, and somehow we're the problem, right? It's as if the film would have basically blamed the special forces guys that were in Mogadishu, that the reason for the Somalians starving was special forces, U.S. special forces being there, right? Had it been portrayed that way, which it's not. And that's the reality on the ground in Gaza. And I know that Chuck has witnessed this firsthand. And that's also why I also reached out to him when Matthew and I were discussing this, because I had a good friend from the Vanguard podcast reach out to me where I got interviewed. And he said, I know a guy who was operating there and has firsthand knowledge. And so I spoke to Matthew, and then we discussed it, and we connected with that guy, like you said, and you have the text messages and all the information. And then I said, what about Chuck? Chuck was there just recently reporting on the humanitarian aid in Gaza, one of the foreigners that went in. It's not the IDF speaking here. This is Chuck, who's a war correspondent of over 20 years of experience on multiple battlefields. And I know that if anybody would have a reliable source of eyewitnessing what is going on in Gaza, he would be a perfect fit. And I'd like to hear his take on that.
Yeah, same. I really would. Chuck, sir, would you mind? When were you in Gaza? When did you leave? What did you experience, sir?
I was there about 2 weeks ago. The GPO in Israel, which is the general press office, put the word out, kind of a last minute thing, to a select group of foreign journalists saying, we will take you into Gaza tomorrow. If you can be there at the right time and everything, we'll take you into Gaza and show you the aid that's piled up in Gaza that the United Nations refuses to put out. And so they are, we showed up down there. They put us in armored vehicles. They drove us across the border into Gaza. Didn't have to go far because there's a LSA, a big parking lot in, yeah, big parking lot. I don't know, probably 100 acres. And just full of pallets of aid as far as you can see. And they're marked with most of them, either UN World Food Program, World Central Kitchen. There were a few boxes there for GHF. And at that time, there were over 1,000 truckloads of aid that had already been cleared, had already been inspected, were ready to give to the people in Gaza. But the United Nations, picking up on the request, essentially, from Hamas to push the narrative that there's starvation in Gaza, refused to go in and deliver that aid. Now, the UN said, well, it's too dangerous for us to go in there. So the IDF said, we will secure corridors so that you can get to your distribution sites. And the UN said, no, we're not going to work with you because that would make us biased. I don't know, biased how? I mean, I don't know how that makes them biased. But as you've seen since then, our reporting caused the United Nations to do a reverse because it made them look bad and start delivering the aid again into Gaza. But they're doing it their way, which is just driving it into Gaza. Their drivers are Palestinian. The trucks are Palestinian. So they bring them in on trucks that are not Palestinian to this LSA. And there's a bunch of Palestinian guys that work there. They offload those trucks and cross-load it onto Palestinian trucks, which look like stuff out of Mad Max. And then Palestinian drivers take them into Gaza. So if you've heard about Palestinian people being killed as they're waiting for aid, well, a large number of those who were killed, it's nowhere near the numbers that the Gaza Health Ministry has put out, but a large number of those that are killed waiting for aid are run over by those trucks. And there are lots of videos that have come out shot by Gazans who show people being run over by those trucks. But you just have to keep in mind, those are not being driven by Israeli soldiers. Those are being driven by other Palestinians. And so now what you're seeing is there's so much aid in Gaza. I mean, if you do the math, they had enough aid sitting there at that LSA with that could have fed every person in Gaza for over a week, at least. Now, Israel said, look, we're not putting any limits on the number of trucks that can come in. They all have to be inspected, of course, to make sure that they're not bringing in contraband. But we'll let in as many as want to come in. But bringing the food into Gaza is not the problem. The delivery is the problem. The distribution is the problem. And that's where the big fight is here, because Hamas wants to control that. That's how they maintain control over the populace. That's how they make their money. And GHF goes completely against that distribution model and gives the food directly to the people. We just heard about another woman who is an Israeli Arab woman who was collecting up food to distribute to people in Gaza. And she's fed more than 100,000 people in Gaza, but she was giving it directly to the people. And Hamas threatened her life. She's now in hiding in Israel because this Israeli Arab woman was not giving the food through Hamas. So the same people who are starving the hostages are starving their own people. They are weaponizing the aid against their own people and then using their people's hunger as a weapon against Israel. So they think this is great. The famine in Gaza, that's fantastic for Hamas because they're now being rewarded for that with countries like Canada and the UK and France talking about recognizing a Palestinian state. We were told that by the COGAT colonel who briefed us. There were a few UN SUVs at that LSA when we were there, and they were apparently there having talks with the IDF about getting aid in. And the IDF was saying, he told us we offered to bring it in, and they refused our offer. So, Chuck, I made a rookie mistake.
I muted myself to check the audio when everybody told me that you were echoing, and I forgot to unmute myself afterwards. So I have to restate these facts for the audience.
Okay, go for it.
GHF hands out 655% more food, 655% more food than the World Food Program inside of Gaza. That is the UN's World Food Program. 92%, and this stat comes straight from the UN's website, 92%+ of the food that is handed over by the Israelis to the UN's World Food Program is stolen by either Hamas widely or the Palestinians. 655% more. If the World Food Program and the UN did their job, every single Gazan would be receiving 1.25 meals a day between GHF and the World Food Program. Because they have so much stolen, they receive around 0.7 meals a day currently. Chuck, I apologize for my rookie mistake. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, so the COGAT general told us, or no, I'm sorry, colonel, that briefed us when we were there, told us that they had offered to secure that distribution for the UN and the World Food Program and the World Central Kitchen and all those guys, and they all refused. But they went right back. And these are the same organizations that are saying it's too dangerous the way GHF is doing it. Now, we've all seen the videos out of the GHF distributions. They have a giant open area like a football field with berms all around it and barbed wire and everything. So it funnels everybody in through one entrance. They lay out boxes of aid or pallets of aid. And then they open the gate, people run in, they grab a box, they run back out the other side. And it's a very orderly, as orderly as anything gets in Gaza. Nothing is more orderly than the GHF method. Of course, then you see the UN method, which is people, looks like zombie apocalypse, World War Z all over these trucks, and just tearing stuff off in there. And killing each other in the process. And of course, you see no women, no children in there getting any food because it's the men that are all duking it out to get it. Now, to your point about the numbers, one semi-truck of aid can carry about 55,000 meals. So if you do the math, 120 truckloads a day would feed all of Gaza and feed them well. Hamas is now threatening to starve to death the remaining living hostages unless they get 1,000 truckloads a day, almost 10 times more than they need, brought into Gaza. And Israel's actually considering it because they're thinking maybe if we just flood the zone with so much aid that nobody would be able to make the point that there's not enough food in Gaza, then we take that weapon away from Hamas. The problem is Hamas is now saying whether we get the aid or not, we're not going to give it to the hostages unless you agree to our demands, which is basically Israel has to lose the war.
Thank you for that, Chuck. Appreciate it. Daron, I have a question for you coming from the Israeli Defense Forces side of the house. It has been reported that every single day the IDF is shutting down operations in order to attempt to lock down the humanitarian aid corridor. From your experience inside of Gaza, is that a true statement? And if so, why is it that we are seeing Palestinians and Hamas able to take over these convoys from the World Food Program?
So, just so I understand the question, you're saying, like, rephrase that, kind of simplify a little bit more for me.
So it was reported. It was reported a while ago that, and this is something that after I read it and I looked at it, and there was a statement on it that the IDF did offer to go and provide security for the World Food Program. The UN denied it. The UN has not brought in peacekeepers to do so. So in an attempt to kind of curtail the looting that the IDF basically attempts to lock down these humanitarian aid corridors that the World Food Program is traveling through on a daily basis when they're picking up and moving, like trying to coordinate and get this done. Yet, even though the IDF is doing that, and this is common sense to me, something that I looked at, but if you would, sir, would you mind explaining if that is the case? One, confirming that, yes, the IDF is still actively doing that. And two, how is it that there is these swarms of Palestinians and also vastly Hamas that is taking this aid from the World Food Program?
Okay, right. I see what you're saying. So basically, I mean, I'll put it like this. The IDF is trying to do everything it can to help assist the different organizations that are trying to distribute the aid into the Gaza Strip, much of which is also shutting down routes for the military to be able to conduct its operations on. Many operations get put aside because of the hours of distribution and so on and so forth. So it's a very complex situation where you're kind of working within a battle zone, so to speak. Not that the areas of distribution are, but in order for the military to get to where the battle zones are, you have to essentially go through a lot of the same and similar routes, actually, that the civilians have to go through to get to the distribution areas. So we're trying everything we can to help provide security if allowed. And like you said, a lot of times we're not granted to be involved in that. In some cases, if you saw, the IDF actually shared some footage where they were involved with one of those distributions, providing the security for that particular aid distribution that was published by the IDF. But I mean, it's like really sketchy. You know what I mean? It's really sketchy because on the one hand, you're trying to assist, you're trying to help, you're providing security for whoever's there doing a job of feeding civilians, but at the same time, you're actually being worked against. And I think we'll get into that a little bit later. And that was part of the testimony that we got from Mr. Aguilera's partner, if you like, or one of the people he worked with that we contacted. And they pointed out to me that the GHF, its position was actually anti-IDF, fighting against the IDF, not wanting anything from the IDF. No cooperation, no help, actually butting heads with the IDF. And I saw that in Gaza as well. I saw that in our operations. I saw how delicate the relationship was. And mm-hmm. I was told for myself and my teammates that we had to be very careful in our operations and that whatever we're doing, that, in other words, don't even make a gesture, anything towards the GHF convoys, because we'd actually cross each other in some cases. In some of our missions, we literally are crossing each other and passing each other. And so we had to be very professional and not even make a motion or some kind of hand signal, right, that would maybe offend those guys and, you know, trigger a reaction or what have you and give the wrong impression.
Sure.
But yeah, how does the Hamas get to those areas? Because Hamas is embedded in the civilian population. Right. They hide amongst the civilian population, and that's how they can gain access to these areas. And that's exactly why the military is so keen on providing security for the humanitarian distribution, because like you heard from Tony, he says, oh, they're just a bunch of innocent people. They don't have shoes. They have, you know, torn clothes. You know, they're just innocent. It's like, that's what you see, maybe. What I see is a guy who just crawled out of a tunnel, tossed his weapons, tossed all whatever, hid in civilian population. And if he chooses to, sneaks into the civilian population a weapon, which it has happened. And they actually opened fire on the GHF in one instance that I know of.
So
that's how it happens, if that makes sense. I mean, it's very sketchy. Yeah. It's very hard because you're dealing with a population that has the bad guys embedded in them and you can't differentiate. They're not walking around with uniforms, you know?
Yeah. So
now I'd be interested to know.
One second. Hold on. Sorry, I gotta stop the echo. There is an echo on the other side when I go to the scene. So I apologize, but it's fixed now. Go ahead, Chuck. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
So I just have a question for Daron that is germane to this conversation. What is your rules of engagement? What are your rules of engagement when it comes to dealing with the civilian population in Gaza? You know, I saw a video where they were rushing toward a couple of IDF positions, getting pretty close. There was a truck there that they were climbing over like locusts. And you could hear the IDF soldiers saying, hold your fire, do not shoot. So what are your rules of engagement?
Yeah, that's exactly the what I was mentioning that the IDF had published as proof to our rules of engagement. And that's exactly it. In Hebrew, I mean, the guy's saying, and you're right, that's exactly what he's saying. He's saying, don't fire, hold your fire, hold your fire, hold your fire. Because unless the civilians are an imminent threat to myself or those around me or others around them, if it's terrorists opening fire on civilians, I need to stop them. So that's essentially the rules of engagement, if you like, in a nutshell. If there's no fire towards me, no fire directed at me, I can't identify the threat, and it's not imminent, you're not allowed to engage. So you're very careful with that. The only time you're able to engage an armed combatant is when there's no civilians around, and I can guarantee that I can eliminate the combatant without hurting the civilians. As a caveat,
so if you see a guy running in a crowd of people with a weapon, you can't open fire on that crowd to try to kill that one guy.
Not at all. In fact,
we obviously know that. As soldiers, we know that, but maybe some of our viewers don't understand that.
Right. In fact, on the missions that we conducted many times where we had the luxury, we had snipers covering those areas where we had the civilians in eye shot, if you like, for that very reason. So you had direct and specific fire, if you like, that could be engaged if needed to avoid, again, human casualties. It doesn't mean that the snipers are going to, you know, hit their target bang on and no mistakes will happen. But rather that, then this guy either hurt the soldiers that are there, right, and or hurt the civilians that are there. So it's the trade-off. You know, it's not war isn't perfect, and that's why it's perfect having you guys on this podcast, because you have background in warfare and you can attest to what I'm saying. Both of you in different generations, of course, of war fighting. There's one thing I think we can all agree on: war sucks. War is hell. War is chaotic. It's not this classroom where we can sit here and we can discuss details and it's perfect. Hell happens. Horrible things happen, and nobody's happy when civilians are hurt. Ever, I don't think in any of my fellow friends that I have friendships with in the military community.
And that's something that, you know, I was discussing with Nate from Valhalla BFT. I'm trying to remember the last time him and I were talking. Tony knows all of these facts, and he did not bother to mention this. An honest person, because I'd like to start directing it now. I think unless you guys else have something else that you would like to say, Drone or Chuck, on this matter, yay or nay?
No, let's talk about Tony.
Okay, great. Tony knows these facts. He is well aware of these facts. He knows that the IDF wasn't allowed to operate near. And so the first thing that I'd like to do is I'd like to address the things he said were true in the case of transparency, like for transparency, right? Because this here we are all about speaking the truth. And what is known to be true that actually did come out of his mouth, that he did work for UG Solutions. We also know that he was a liaison officer appointed into the JTOC, or the Joint Tactical Operations Center. His job was to coordinate between the Israeli Defense Forces, SRS, and GHF. He was collecting information on the ground. Now, I will also give him some credit. What I heard was he did a pretty dang good job when he was there. Now, remind you, his job was as a liaison officer. He was going in and out of Gaza, from what I've been told, almost on a daily basis. He would sleep at the JTOC. He'd come up with better security plans and things of that nature. And this is where he started to get in a grift with some of the leadership at UG Solutions, because that's not his assigned task. However, the other guys from UG Solutions all vouch and say that, yes, there was a security issue and he was appropriately addressing it. As a Green Beret, I would expect nothing less out of the man. And he was doing a good job and he was coordinating back and forth. But the fact is that he did end up getting fired as an end result of all of that. Some of his true statements that he came out with following when he came into the media, stating that the IDF was using artillery and was also using mortar rounds in and around the GHF sites. Those statements are true. they have been confirmed by the IDF. The IDF has owned them. And yes, civilian casualties were a result. It is war. Somebody made a human error, and it resulted in people dying. So far, Chuck and Daron, to the best of your knowledge, do you guys agree with those statements?
Sure.
Not all.
Absolutely.
Not all. Go ahead, Daron. If you don't, that's why you're here, right? If you don't, please. I'll give you the floor.
Well, what was it? The fact that there were civilians that were hurt in the process. Are we talking about from the military or from the GHS?
So from the military side. So the report, yes. So what the report was that ended up, because it got leaked out earlier, I'd have to go grab the exact date. But again, the IDF did own up this, said that they got some bad dope for the guns or bad data that ended up going into the guns. And the situation was that there was a large crowd that was flanking. They had requested some artillery support or something of that nature in order to stop from getting overran again. And that the wrong coordinates, perhaps, we don't know. They're investigating it. But they did own up to that situation. Is that true?
If the IDF owned up to it, again, this is a firefight I was not in.
Yeah, you were busy fighting a war. Right.
Yeah, so that's a firefight I wasn't in. So whatever, I know that the military is good at owning up. Our military is very good at owning up to what had happened. Sorry, I was mostly reacting to, because I'm thinking of his interview that I heard him speak. And what is false is that he said that there was tank fire into the crowds, and that there were artillery shells, and that there were rockets.
So I didn't hear him talk about the tank fire rockets going into the crowds. I heard him say that the tank fire went into a car. He claimed that they shot a civilian vehicle. And again,
that's in another interview.
Oh, I missed that one.
This is the one with one of the senators that he did. He did two interviews with two different senators. I forget the first senator's name. He's less famous to me, at least. The other one's Bernie Sanders on his show or on his YouTube. But long story short is, I believe it was in that interview with that particular senator where he mentioned that they also fired rockets. So that, of course, rung out.
The IDF fired
into my
rockets?
Head. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
From what, an Apache?
Yeah. You follow up. That's where I went. Really? That? Wow. You know, what we call crowd control, right? That's pretty excessive. Anybody who knows and has been in a battlefield, that is super excessive. I'll put it this way: being in special forces, we don't get air support for every mission, let alone crowd control, if that makes sense.
And it's wasteful, by the way, because there is ongoing combat operations and you do likely have troops in contact pretty much all the time. And so you are pulling air assets away and wasting ammunition, which those aircraft then, number one, they have to balance fuel and they have to balance ammunition. So they're not going to be wasting those things on top of that. And I find it very interesting. But I also want to get back to the tank thing here in just a sec. Drone, told me, I think the first time I interviewed you, that you have had airstrikes that were canceled by the pilots, which blew my mind as an American.
Yeah.
Having served in combat. That the pilots are the ones that are getting the final say in the airdrops. Is that accurate still?
100%. 100%. You'll hear it. I mean, again, I'm not a pilot, but I know Hebrew. And I can hear the chatter between the pilots and the control room that's saying, this is your target. Go for it. You have a go. And the last minute when the pilot sees, because they apparently, again, I'm talking smack right now. I don't know what the heck I'm talking about, but they basically have some kind of technology in the cockpit where they can also see the battle space. And apparently if they see a human casualty, a possible human casualty, in other words, civilians populating around the target, which is where the bad guys are, if they see that there's going to be a threat to those people and basically what people call collateral damage or human people that would eventually be affected by that airstrike, he can call it off, or she. I mean, we also have women that are fighter pilots. And so either one of those pilots, they can call it off. And you hear it on the radio constantly, them calling it off. I can tell you where my commander directly was arguing with one of those pilots and said, mother effer, you fire now. This is not a freaking debate. you know, where he basically gave him an order because the guy was like, well, and I'm not sure, and blah, blah, blah. It had nothing to do with a human casualty. It was just that they were not feeling good with the targets we were giving them, so to speak. And my commander basically just cut him off and said, you take that shot now, you know, quit jacking right. around. So,
all right. So now Daron is as well. If I'm missing something, because you also spoke to the same individual that I did, and yes, I will read exactly what happened this day. Now it has been confirmed to me, to the best of this individual's knowledge, who was inside the liaison officer's chat, that GHF has, that the only time a tank was fired during Aguilar's stint inside of Israel and Gaza was this one occasion, just one, when the GHF checkpoint was getting overran. And for the first time ever, you're going to actually hear the true story about what happened. And Daron, if for some reason I messed this up, right? Because I'm going off recall from what this gentleman told me. I didn't prepare this. Yeah. I wasn't expecting to come out with all of this today. and then I'm going to read specifically what happened that day directly from the chat. And I would release it, but I have to redact them first out of my word, because I am a man of my word. So here's what happened. On this day, the GHF checkpoint was being overran, and Tony Aguilar was on the ground inside this particular checkpoint. It was one of the very first days that they had opened up. They had reached back from this distribution site and requested from the JTOC. They requested from the JTOC to have what is called a show of force. Now, the IDF is not allowed near those distribution points. Correct, Daron?
Correct. And specifically because the GHF does not want us around them.
So they requested a show of force. Inside of the LNO chat, it shows the very first thing that was authorized and requested by GHF forces on the ground was an Apache helicopter flyover. Now, this is something that might kind of, I don't know, shock some of you guys, right? But generally speaking, have an Apache come on station, i.e. overhead and being controlled, and flying low is a very low show of force that we used to do. It's very low on the threshold. We used to do it with fast movers and Apaches, all sorts of stuff. That was ineffective. And the GHF personnel on the ground requested IDF assistance again. IDF informed GHF that they had a tank nearby. And GHF said, great, please, we need a show of force. The tank crew informed GHF that they had a clear line of sight, and this is in black and white, that they had a clear line of sight over the crowd and into the Mediterranean Sea, and that they are willing to fire one round into the Mediterranean Sea. Now, the craziest part about this, before you say that this tank shouldn't have been shooting over them, and this shocked me when I read it as well, is that tank actually shot over the gate. I'm going to say that again. The tank shot over the gate as the crowd was storming it and into the Mediterranean Sea. And that is the only time while Tony was in Gaza, the only time that a tank responded and fired a round in support of GHF. Daron and Chuck, your thoughts.
Chuck?
Well, I can tell you that having seen in the Ukraine war a tank fire into a crowd of Ukrainian soldiers, it was a Russian tank that was mistaken by the Ukrainians for a friendly. And so they just stood there, and this tank pulled up next to them and turned the turret and fired into this platoon of guys from Ukraine and essentially vaporized them all. I can tell you, having seen that, if an IDF tank fired into a crowd of people, like we've seen on all these videos of people, you know, pressing forward like zombies trying to get the food, there would have been so many dead people that there's no way there wouldn't have been tons of video out of bodies and body parts laying all over the place. They would have killed hundreds of people with one shot into a crowd like that. And a lot of them would have just turned to pink mist. So yeah. If that actually happened the way Tony Aguilar said it did, there would be tons of video by the Palestinians showing that destruction, but there's none. So that right there tells me everything I need to know.
Yeah. And in this case, lack of proof and lack of evidence speaks louder, I think, than any of us could, because the Palestinians are very quick to put that stuff online. We would have definitely heard about that. We for dang sure heard when Hamas had snuck into the crowds outside of one of the GHF sites, started a riot, and trampled over, I think it was 12 that got killed because of this. And security personnel were also threatened in this incident, and they were very quick to blame that on the security contractors, claiming that they're the ones that started all of that. They're to blame for it. And yet, not a peep out of Hamas, not a peep out of the Palestinians about a tank firing into a crowd or a tank shooting a car. Daron, your thoughts, sir?
I think you guys nailed it. I mean, the lack of the opportunity. I mean, that's a golden opportunity for the Palestinians, especially for Hamas, to capitalize on a mistake by the IDF, because I guarantee you every mistake we make on the battlefield, we pay dearly for it, not just emotionally or for our own sake of, you know, crap, you know, that did not go the way we wanted. And now that warfighter has to live with that human casualty on their conscience. But it's your enemy that's going to capitalize on it and rub it right in your face and post it to all of the international media and make a smear of what monsters we are. And the fact that none of that happened. And the other thing is the fact that I didn't even hear about it, because to my knowledge, I was operating around the same time in that area. And in fact, I'm almost sure it's the same distribution center, based on the information that they're saying that I happen to be in very close vicinity to, because we were doing and conducting some missions with that particular battalion that it sounds like that were providing the assistance for the GHF guys.
Yeah.
So what would have happened to that tank crew if they had actually fired into a crowd of civilians? What would the IDF have done to those guys?
The tank commander would essentially get, first of all, they would stop operations the whole day. First of all operations in that area, done. Everything done. A total standstill. Then they would suspend those soldiers. They would take them into hearing, and they would be grilled by their commanders. And then they would basically go up the chain of command and be given the final punishment, which essentially it's going to be jail. It's going to be jail, not for the whole tank crew, of course, but definitely for the person who either pulled the trigger and or the tank commander who gave the order to fire into that particular coordinate that they were fixed on. Because if I remember correctly, again, the tank people are going to like tear me up for this. But if I remember correctly, you have the tank commander who essentially has the zero on, has the target that they want to hit, but the guy who pulls the trigger, so to speak, the so-called gunner, if you like, I don't know what you call him again in English, but the one who basically pulls the trigger, that guy is, I'm not sure if they even see the target themselves. But any case, all that to say is whoever would have been responsible directly for that casualty and knew that they were firing into a crowd, they go straight to jail. End of story. There's no question about it.
Yep.
So this incident occurred, I just checked. This incident occurred on Tuesday, May 27th, and you guys can go back and check all of the press releases and everything about when the site got overran. That'll corroborate this as well. And I'm just going to go ahead and read directly from the chat because I said I would. And I might need to ask some clarification, but I'm pretty sure I'm right on this. IDF is not entering. Show of force will be rotary wing and Merkava IDF tank. So that is them asking for the IDF to show up. And the response that they put out was that the IDF will not be entering, presumably the site, and the show of force is going to be a rotary wing asset and a Merkava tank. Now, obviously, there's other communications and things like that that are taking place outside of this. Next message that comes out, crowds see remaining HA inside blue, starting to mass on blue gates. Need that show of force. Response. IDF is working on ETA ASAP. So the IDF is working on their estimated time of arrival. We'll pass as soon as we get it. Next message that we get. Escalation of force, shooting over the crowd at blue gates, moving to link up with the IDF. And again, this is the only time the tank responded, and that is the only mention of the tank inside of that. And the reports are substantiating that the tank did fire over the crowd and into the med. It did not hit a vehicle. It did not shoot into a crowd. And the IDF was even hesitant to respond. Gentlemen?
I mean, there it is in black and white. I can't wait until you can release those.
Oh, I will. Now, I also asked him for clarification whether or not he was involved in any other tank battles, right? If there was any mention of a tank, if any of that came up, he said no. Number one, he would have heard about it. He was inside of the channels as well. And never once did he see that while Tony Aguilar was on ground. It's just, that's the only time it happened.
It's instructive to read this, to listen to you read this and explain to people how that works with that talk that they're talking to back there, the Tactical Operations Center. Everything that is said, every message that's sent is saved. It's all cataloged. It's all logged in. And so, and that's done for a reason, specifically for things like this, so that things can be investigated if something does go wrong and fault can be assigned. Because whenever something goes wrong, somebody has to be at fault when you're in the military. Okay. So all of the things that Tony Aguilar is saying should be easily verifiable by getting a hold of those logs, and it sounds like you're getting copies of them. So good for you.
All right. So my followers also have a bit of a personality here. So bear with me. All right. Fox McCloud says, give it to me straight, Matt. How do we blame this on the Jews? Daron, how do we blame this on you guys?
Well, you just can just go for it. You know, I mean, there's no way around it. There's always someone who's going to find a way to blame the Jews, blame the IDF, no matter what, how much proof, how many receipts we give you that it's not us, somehow they're going to find a way to label it and blame it on us. And I'm okay with that, but we're not here to, we're not here to defend the IDF. If you like, we're not here to, make excuses, right? We're just here to set the facts as we see them, as we know them. And I think Matthew, myself, and Chuck have done due diligence looking into this, digging into the facts, contacting people that were there. I wasn't there. Matthew wasn't there. Chuck wasn't there. But what we were eyewitnesses to, in my case, of how the military operates and what I saw. Chuck, as a reporter, been in reporting war zones all over the world for over 20 years. He knows war more than anybody I know personally, and has probably been in more combat than I have, guaranteed. And if he saw anything shady, and I know Chuck too personally, if he saw anything shady, he'll tell about it, because he really is good at just giving the facts, even if it's going to make Israel look bad, because his journalistic, righteousness, if you like, it's going after the truth behind the story, is the most important thing to him. And I know that. And that's why I thought it was important to have him join this conversation, because that's really what it's about. But yeah, well, sorry, you know, if I went on a rant on the Jew thing.
I have to laugh when I see people in the comments, you know, oh, Chuck's, he's just a biased reporter. He reports for the CBN. well, look, I have spent a lot of time in combat. I mean, 20 plus years covering every war on the planet, and then actual combat as a Ranger before that. But I can tell you, Darone, one of the ways that I have learned to know who has the moral high ground in a conflict is which side will allow me to report the truth, even if it's uncomfortable, without punishing me. And so, you know, when I look at the war in Israel, there have been times when I have reported things that I saw that were not cool that the IDF did. There was that time those IDF soldiers were in there ransacking somebody's shop in Gaza. And the very fact that they allowed me, while I was in Israel, to report that and to condemn it on my show, and there was no blowback to me. They gave me the journalistic freedom to do that. Shows, number one, that Israel is a righteous modern country, and number two, that what Tucker Carlson says about the IDF keeping a complete lid on all the journalists that are in Israel is false. Right. So I think that's a good standard that you can look at. I've done the same thing in Ukraine. I've reported things that were not cool that the Ukrainian military had done, such as shooting prisoners one time or things like that. But the other thing that tells you whether or not that's a righteous country is what the country does about it when something does happen.
Right.
And in the case, that's why I asked you that question about the tank. If the tank had fired into a group of people, if it happened to the commander, well, he would have gone to jail. Well, that tells you what you need to know, because if that was a Hamas guy in a Hamas tank, if they had them, firing into a group of Jewish civilians, you know, school children, that guy would be made a hero in Gaza. So that's the difference. And that's how you can know whether or not you're reporting from the right side or not.
Yeah. You know, here's the other thing too, Chuck. It had to have been well over a year ago now, year and a half, or maybe it was about a year ago when the IDF had gone into Rafah. I had noticed a unit that was down there, and I had a friend that was actually over by the Rafah border crossing as well. And they had set up a chow hall inside of a mosque, and I saw it. And again, that's something inside of the United States military we're not going to do. Ended up calling them out on it on this show. And there is a lot of Israelis that end up watching the show. That ended. That stopped. And I didn't get any kickback. I didn't lose followers. I didn't have people freak out. I didn't have IDF people tell me that I'm a POS for reporting it. None of that. None of it.
Right.
Also, you know, easy can call out their propaganda as well, because every side does it in warfare. When the IDF first went into Gaza and they went over to the Shifa hospital, they had a bunch of humanitarian aid boxes of medical supplies that had English writing on the side, and clearly just like slapped on paper. I was like, oh, you guys, you know, I mean, things like this, you know, like it's out there, and the facts are going to speak for themselves. And also, as like, you can call them combat correspondents, but Chuck, I think you more or less fit in that category than I do. Sitting over here, I've requested going to Gaza numerous times, haven't been approved yet. Come on, IDF. But the point that I'm making, right, is you also have combat experience. Like every single one of us sitting on this panel have combat experience. And so when things like when the Israeli service member down, I believe it was inside of Khan Yunis, that accidentally ended up shooting a hostage. And we talked about that, and we explained why that is and how the fog of battle actually happens. And, you know, like we have the ability to talk about those things and explain it. And that individual that made that choice that day has to live with that for the rest of their lives. And I don't think that's something that a lot of people can really get through their head, that this soldier that wanted to go in there and get these people out and was so dang close and likely had intel that they were in the area made the wrong decision. But those are life and death decisions that these soldiers, including Darone here, are faced with on a daily basis. You guys agree with that statement?
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
In fact, I was there when that happened, not right in the vicinity, but we were very close to where that soldier had unfortunately, like you said, shot one of the hostages that ran towards him in, you know, being elated that here's the IDF and this poor young soldier like that. Because that's the other thing is that the guy who fired on the hostage is a young guy that's never been in war. Right. So we went in with a bunch of kids. This is their first war and they were terrified. They were peeing their pants, so to speak. Right. And that's exactly what happened is they, you know, this young kid made a faulty call that felt threatened for his life because you're in the pitch darkness of Gaza and there's terrorists popping out of holes in every corner and taking pot shots at the soldiers. So in his mind, that's what he saw in the darkness, in the middle of the night. It wasn't like a daylight scenario where you could clearly identify this guy from afar. And it was terrible when it went on the radio that just happened. We were all crushed because we were that close to this poor hostage that was able to get loose. And then that happened.
Yeah. You know, I, looks like we lost him, unfortunately. And I'm sure he'll come back up here in just a sec. And I kind of wanted to wait on him until we moved to the next portion, but it's not important. I think he'll join us in a second. Chuck, did you have any thoughts on that either?
Well, as I said, when you're in war is by definition a totally uncontrollable, chaotic situation. I wrote a book about the mindset that a warrior has to have to go into battle, and it's called Bulletproof, The Making of an Invincible Mind.
Yeah.
And I interviewed a bunch of military psychologists, actually the guys that did the psych evals for the Delta Force tryouts. So they'd get a couple thousand guys in there and they would look at all these guys and try to ascertain which ones were most qualified. And what they told me was, we get these guys in here that are exactly the same in every way, tactically and technically proficient, physically fit. And he said, what it really comes down to is whether or not they have a strong faith foundation, which I found very surprising. I said, what do you mean by that? And they said, well, we have found that because combat is a totally uncontrollable environment, somebody who has a worldview that says that everything is just random, the whole world is just random, and that so they feel like they have to control everything around them. And when you're in combat, that's impossible. So you get task saturated and you can't perform as well. But a guy who has a strong faith foundation and says, you know what, I'm just going to put my head down and do my job exactly like I'm told and just leave the rest up to God and everybody else, is going to perform better in combat on average than a guy who doesn't have that. So he said, if they're exactly the same in every other way, then we'll always take the guy that has a strong faith foundation. I just thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. No, I actually think that's really important too. Like there's the saying that, and I want to get on after this to like move back to Tony, but yeah, there's a saying that there's no atheist in a foxhole. And I will tell you, I've seen people that I've never seen before pray in their lives, move over and join in prayer. I have. And
absolutely.
It was actually kind of crazy as well to see even some of our Muslim interpreters that we would have that would actually also stand by while we were praying as well. And they would do the same. And so I find it true what you just said. Absolutely. And I think faith is very important, and not just for while you're in service, but also following combat. Right. And it's, I mean, I was actually thinking about inviting.
We should do a whole podcast on that sometime.
We should, Chuck, you and I. I was actually thinking about inviting you to join in a daily devotional here at the end of them that we do at the show. But I was like, we got Daron here. I can always do it tonight. Not a big deal. And I don't want to make Daron feel weird or anything. And it's just not right. But I want to move the topic.
I'll feel so weird. I'm getting so uncomfortable right now, guys.
You're no weirder than like when pieces. I took you grocery shopping and explained to you how to get good prices on steaks.
I've been to Shabbat dinner with Daron, and I can tell you, Daron has a powerful faith himself.
Exactly.
Yep.
So I want to put this up on the screen here. Well, it's actually not going to be on the screen. I'm sorry. I'm just going to blow it up. So here's a picture of Tony. And to my knowledge, have you guys seen this picture before?
Yep.
You have?
No, I haven't.
I hadn't seen this picture before of Anthony. And
well, I saw a similar one actually, but yeah.
Yeah. I hadn't seen that one yet. And that got shared with me, along with a bunch of other messages. Okay. And the key part about it is they were the daily sit reps of Tony when he was coming out of Gaza and the different things that he saw and the praise that he would give. And just as it was reported by GHF, the exact same sit reps are the same ones that I have been given. And then some about his time inside Gaza and what he saw and the great reports. And they also include the alleged child that was murdered, according to Tony. Something else really incredible came out of this conversation with this gentleman. This guy remembers when Tony actually came out that day, because I told you he was going in Gaza and coming back out pretty much on a daily basis. And I think that GHF might've got something wrong. Their attorneys did when they made the statement. They said that he had only been to one location. I've been able to confirm that's not actually true. And again, we're all about speaking the truth here. And something really profound, I think, came out of the conversation with this other gentleman. And that was that when he came out, he was bragging about that boy. He was overjoyed about meeting that kid. That kid did mean something to Tony. But nobody, not a single soul, is saying that when he came out, he was upset that this kid got killed. Not a single soul on the ground says that that kid got killed. Nobody. And his daily report also, which again, I will release in transparency with everything else after it's been redacted. His daily report speaks praise of UG Solutions and GHF and the IDF for the work that they had done in every single one of his daily reports. Thoughts? I mean, you're speechless. Well, and that's okay.
It sounds like he's contradicting himself then. And so I think these reports that he put out need to be very widely disseminated. And I'm kind of wondering why the heck hasn't GHF, you know, just put these everywhere. I realize there may be some things that need to be redacted in there, but I mean that, yeah, I mean, they can do that. They could put out some stuff and redact things that, you know, not, we don't want to tell bad guys anything they don't need to know, but at the same time, this ought to be going far and wide. They ought to be mailing copies of this stuff to every news outlet out there. Of course, most of them aren't going to run it, but I would.
So I've got some other stuff that's extremely groundbreaking, but I also have the proof that he got fired. And I kind of want to read that as well. I was kind of contemplating whether or not I want to bust out the fact that he's a liar and that I have the proof of it, but I'm going to go ahead and do that. Give me a second to where I go find it. This was a personal conversation that he had had. And to understand like the conversation that was taking place here, I think it's important that people understand what kind of the situation on the ground. And I also think that, you know, Chuck, your perspective, and also Daron, I think yours as like a soldier as well, comes into play here. The gentlemen inside of UG Solutions were upset at the security situation on the ground. They were not happy. That is a fact. They were not happy with the security situation. They weren't happy they got overran. They felt that some of the things might not have been up to par. And they were upset about it. And that is where the gripe, when you look at the signal messages that were in messages that were released by GHF's attorney, to my understanding, are going to come into play here. So when Tony is arguing and he's saying, hey, if it has to do with this guy, you know, that's not a problem. You can put me back in this position, which is a whole nother statement, right? But this in itself is something that's absolutely brand new. Something that is absolutely brand new. And I'm going to read this verbatim minus two redacted names that I have to. And I'm going to use blank as the redacted name. And this message was put out on June 16th by Anthony Aguilar. And I quote, I am going to burn this effer down. Blank and blank called me and said, stay out. You're getting paid. stay in the hotel and wait to hear from us. So I'm waiting. If they follow through with this termination and send me home, it's war. I'll say that again. Tony Aguilar, and I quote, so I am waiting. If they follow through with this termination and send me home, it's war. He sent that on June 16th of 2025. Gentlemen?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. It's not surprising. Not in the least.
It's truthfully, I mean, it kind of goes with everything else that we've been saying in the show. The guy lied flat out. And in his own words, admits that he was up for termination, that he was being terminated. And I'm going to have to go back and check the dates because, like I said, I got all of these within just a couple days and see when he was going back and forth with UG Solutions and everything else. But I got a feeling he was getting paid as it was like part of the contract or something of that nature, telling him to just go sit his butt in the hotel, like do whatever, right? As he's begging to get a different job. So next, the question that I have to ask, and I think it's very pertinent. I think both of you gentlemen are going to agree with me on this question is if this child was killed and Tony felt so disheartened by that child being killed, why is he begging to get his job back? Number one, in those messages that GHF released, that's not an organization I would want to work for. And that is definitely something that I would be throwing out there. I would have quit. I would have brought this up. I would have gathered witness statements. I'd have done everything to make sure that I had documented proof. This man is a freaking Green Beret, and he understands, like, hear me out. He is of above average intelligence. We are screened for that. I will tell you personally, we are screened for that. And as a lieutenant colonel, that man understands the importance of documentation when it goes down to making a serious accusation of that nature. He didn't get a witness statement. He didn't take photographs. We know he had a helmet cam, right? Gentlemen, we saw Tony's helmet cam footage, didn't we? Didn't he have a helmet cam? We know he was taking pictures. He self-admitted to it. We know he was taking videos. He self-admitted to that. And yet he doesn't have it. He didn't come out of Gaza that day stating that this child was killed. He didn't put out a sit rep talking about civilian casualties, which would have been something that had to have been reported. He didn't do any of that. Nada. Zip. Zilch. Instead, he came out extremely happy, extremely overjoyed, and now we have a brand new message that shows he was terminated. Do you guys kind of agree with this? That all of it, like, as a lieutenant colonel, as a Green Beret, Daron, I know you're not in the U.S. Army Special Forces, but Israeli, correct? So,
yeah,
you are above average intelligence. And you, of all people, probably understand the documentation portion.
Yeah.
And as a lieutenant colonel, even more so, you would understand that. Retired, of course. Which, after hearing about this, I hope they strip his rank. I hope they strip him of his tab. Personally, I don't want that man in my community. Chuck, thoughts?
You know, these are questions that Tucker Carlson should have been asking. You know, he prides himself on being, you know, such a groundbreaking journalist. How come Tucker Carlson didn't do any investigation into this? How come he didn't reach out and get information from GHF directly about Tony Aguilar before he had him on his show and gave him a platform of millions of people to spread these lies? Because these lies are literally going to get people killed. There's no two ways about it. With all of this propaganda that's coming out, that's pro-Hamas, that's anti-Israel, is getting Israelis killed. I just finished a live on my channel about this, that we're talking about Hillel Fuld, who's an Israeli tech entrepreneur. I've interviewed him before. Just made a post today about it, saying that he believes that there will be an attack against Jews somewhere in the world worse than 10/7 within the next month. And he actually, he predicted 10/7 2 days before it happened. So he's a guy that maybe we ought to listen to, you know.
Wow.
And that, so It's this, and that's what he pointed to, is that the media has been so irresponsible in reporting this stuff and just accepting whatever Hamas puts out at face value and not asking any questions, not digging in a little deeper, that it is literally getting Jews killed and some Americans maybe around the world. And, yeah, and that will only get worse unless we really stand up.
The spokesperson for the PIJ was actually captured by the IDF this last year and actually admitted to exactly what you just said, that they have a direct line of communication with mainstream media outlets, and they put this out and they never question it. He jokes about it. Mm-hmm. And now we're seeing the exact same thing here. And shame on Tucker Carlson, by the way, because GHF and his production crew and his production staff and everybody else, because GHF had put that information out the day prior. Mm-hmm. And that morning at 8 a.m., I believe it was.
Yeah, it was available to them if they wanted it.
Right. Where was that? Why not hold off as that new information comes out? That is one of the most irresponsible things to do, in my opinion, as a journalist, which I don't even know if I can consider him a journalist anymore, that you can do.
I think it's been bought and paid for by Qatar, actually.
A lot of people do. He's got a nickname that like I didn't make it, right? So there's a lot more, and I'm just going to throw this out there. So Tony, if you're watching this, we are coming for you. I have the receipts, friend. I am urging you to stop embarrassing our community and admit that you lied. Urging. For the love of God, save the community enough embarrassment. We've had enough with another famous Green Beret this year. We don't need another one coming out as a liar. Chuck, your thoughts.
Well, I mean, his sin will find him out.
Yeah, what's done in the dark will be brought to light, right? Then you'll be able to judge a tree by its fruits. These are all things. Daron, and I'm going to give each of you a chance for your closing statements. Daron, any thoughts on that?
Well, I think to what Chuck was talking about, and you as well, that the ramifications of these people's actions do lead to anti-Semitic attacks. We have proof of it from the beginning of this war with Candace Owens, Tucker Carlson, Dan Bilzerian. The list goes on of these anti-Semites who have millions of viewers, millions of followers that listen to their anti-Semitic rantings and Jew hatred and libel, making the most horrific claims that the Nazis were guilty of doing, and just pure propaganda. And you know, Kanye West, right? You know, with his wonderful new song, new hit, and you know, people need to understand that actions happen. I mean, the latest attack in New York City, by the way, for people who are not aware, yeah, the woman was screaming "Free Palestine" that was with the dude with the weapon, okay, with the assault rifle.
Yep.
And so as he's running around shooting people, and apparently they were working together, I don't know the exact correlation between, but I mean, she's running around with a keffiyeh screaming "Free Palestine," right? The two diplomats from Israel,
yes, sir,
gunned down, "Free Palestine." You know, people need to understand that there are weighty ramifications behind the words that you're saying, behind what you project and put out there. And just like we've been very careful, I think, and anybody who's watched this program will know and has seen that we're being very careful about how we bash or don't bash and character assassinate this individual that we're talking about. But they came out with false claims, and they represent a community that's better than that. The special forces community. I mean, anybody who's been watching my podcast, well, I guess it's this way, my bad.
Yep.
I'm getting confused. You see this in the background. That's not just, you know, for show. This is part of who I am, right? It's part of, you know, my history with America. My family are all military veterans. My nephew is a West Point grad. This guy's a West Point graduate. I know very well about what they teach them at West Point, the ideology of honor, respect, and he took all of that and flushed it down the toilet. Not to mention when you joined the Special Forces community, which is in many ways even like another notch of, you know, responsibility, because you're given responsibility to do things that as far as missions concerned, that are very sensitive, very damaging to your country if you do it wrong. And you know better than most, Matthew, with the Green Beret community, the type of rapport that you have to build with nation building and rapport with your the group that you're sent to go deal with, that's no joke. If your word life or means death, nothing, honestly, it's life or death. And how many times have I heard Green Berets talk about that? Scott Mann, for example, that I know personally and have read his book about how he had to do that and how he was cut to the heart when his government overturned him and his men's word that they gave to the Afghan community. So, I mean, that's I mean, what more do you say? You know what I mean? It's to me, that's terrible. That's really terrible. And I don't wish that any community of war fighters and especially not the Special Forces community, because again, we're better than that. And it's terrible. It really is. And again, the worst case is that Israelis or Jews are going to get gunned down because of this moron and his statements.
And Christians and Americans, by the way.
And for sure.
Pretty much everybody that does not abide by the radical jihadist faith. Period.
Yeah.
You're on the chopping block. Your country is giving money to these guys, you're on the chopping block. They don't care who you support. They don't care what t-shirts you wear. They don't care what your profile image is on your social media account. They could care less. They don't care if you're part of the LGBTQ plus community that supports Palestine. They don't care. They'll consider you a martyr. And even then, they don't care because you don't share the same radical jihadist faith. They'll kill other Muslims that don't subscribe to the radical Islamic faith. So good luck. And to me, one of the biggest... Chuck, I'm sorry. Did I give you your chance to speak on this yet? Because I can go off. You know, to me, one of the biggest... To me, one of the biggest slaps in the face here is that this man claims to care so much about these Palestinian people. So much about them. And what he is doing by lying is the direct opposite. The truth will set you free, my friends. 655% more humanitarian aid. And we have the receipts in hand. And by him doing what he's doing, he's causing a ton of people to question whether or not those contractors should be on the ground or should not be on the ground. And for every word I've spoken here that's truth, I promise you there is 1,000 more that I have that I am holding on to. There's a lot more about this situation. There's a lot more in these messages. There's a lot more that is recorded and documented that we have not put out today for a reason.
Yeah.
But that is the problem, in my opinion. If you're begging to get your job back after witnessing that type of stuff, that makes me question your moral fibers. If you are knowingly putting out false information, such as a tank shooting into a crowd and a tank shooting a vehicle, you are damaging the organization that is single-handedly, I think is almost fair to say at this point, with 92% of the World Food Program's aid getting stolen, dismantling the only hope that they have if you subscribe to the extreme famine in Gaza. It bothers me to my core as a man. It bothers me to my core as a Christian. It bothers me to my core on so many different levels. Like, I do believe in treating your enemies with kindness when possible. I do believe in praying for your enemies. I do believe in all of those things. I also understand that there's a time to canoe people's foreheads. And he is going about this the entire wrong way, and he is damaging the people that he claims to care about. You guys agree with that?
100%.
Yep, 100%.
So, gentlemen, I'd like to give you a chance for your closing thoughts on this subject before we go ahead and close it out. The floor is yours if you have anything you'd like to say.
So what really concerns me is the what I'm seeing. It's a derangement syndrome, I guess you'd call it, that where these people are willing to throw their lives away to try to score some points for Hamas, for a terrorist organization that would just as soon kill them and use their death as a weapon against Israel. Their single-minded focus is to destroy Israel. And so they will even kill their own people gladly because they worship death. And we're seeing people all around the globe that are getting so radicalized by this way of thinking that even they're not even Muslim. They're not even, a jihadi, but yet they'll walk up to two young lovers on the street in Washington, D.C. one night and gun them all down, throwing your own life away. This guy was 34 years old. He threw his life away voluntarily just to kill two random people he didn't know, right, in the name of something that actually one of those two people he killed was actually working to fix. So that is very concerning. You see so much of that now. You just go, what would lead somebody to be so depraved that they would gladly throw their life away to murder innocent people to make a point, a political point? I don't get that.
Jerome?
Yeah, I mean, exactly. It's terrible. It's sad. And I think, there was a lot of things that I questioned when I saw the interviews with Tony, which is also why I reached out to some friends. And I also reached out to Matthew. And, wearing on your lapel a symbol of your Purple Hearts, right, so-called, that you have, I know a lot of guys that have been wounded in combat. They have Purple Hearts. And I only found out because their family members told me, right? This is not something they kind of portray like, hey, check me out, this is what I have, as if to draw more validity behind what he's about to lie to you about. And then talk about being this family man that likes to, walk his dogs, make pancakes for his kids. And I was like, and happily retired, just got retired. And I'm going, okay, you're not even making sense with your own statements. On the one hand, on the one face, you're saying you're a family man. You can't wait to get back to your family after those 25 years of sacrifice for your country, which I respect and I honor. And thank you, brother. Great job. God bless you for that. But why don't you focus on your family then? Why on earth would you go to a place you've never been, like he claims, and just all of what entailed with that? And then while witnessing these crimes that he's claimed that he's seen, including the contractors, he's got them on footage, and he's claiming that these guys are rooting as they're taking out civilians. I'm going, again, as a West Pointer, as a leader, as someone who's been in combat, why don't you take action and stop? Instead, he's documenting it. He's filming it. And somehow he's the saint in this story, which is his own story. It's his own narrative. And that's all that I could see, is that this dude is living in his own dream fantasy, and he's trying to sell it to the masses. And unfortunately, the masses are buying into it. And I was like, I got to get to the bottom of this, because there's so many questions of what I'm seeing here. His body language, etc., everything that you're looking at, are screaming that this dude's lying. And definitely not what he's portraying or trying to portray to the people that are interviewing him, and that are just giving him softball questions and letting him lie to their face. And so I'm just hopeful that this this interview here that we've done or podcast that we just exposed some of what we know. Like Matthew said, there is such a pile of evidence that I've seen, we've talked about, we've discussed, and honestly, we're being really nice. We're being really nice to Tony, and we're being really nice to his false claims of the IDF, and et cetera. And I just wish for him to get off that bandwagon and put your ego aside, or whatever it is that's causing you to go out there and tell all these lies, and come forward and tell the truth. It's real simple. Just tell the truth. Be a man. be a man of character and honor and tell the truth and get over with it and get on with your life. Go to your kids, go to your family, make pancakes for them, and be that dad that should have been there years ago is all I got to say for him.
Yeah. Yep. And I think we'll leave it at that. I think those are great words. And I want to thank both Chuck and I want to thank you, Daron, for you guys showing up and taking your time today, coming over to the show. So thank you guys. You get, Daron, where can people find you?
They can find me on daronkedar.com. Has all my social media links and everything there. And you guys can follow me and check me out, YouTube, Instagram, what have you.
All right. And Chuck, go ahead, give yourself a plug there, my friend. Not that you need one, but
in the chat, the Hot Zone podcast. And I do reporting for Newsmax and CBN live from locations all around the globe. I happen to be in Armenia as we speak right now and headed to Kazakhstan next week. So we've got lots more coming.
And actually, you know, even knowing who you are, didn't even know that you had the Hot Zone podcast. And so when I found it, I was actually appreciative of it and I've been tuning in. So thank you for having that. It's good to always put it out there regardless of your past. So thank you, gentlemen, both. And definitely want to be able to do that episode that we talked about in the middle of this as well with you. Be an honor to knock that out. So thank you, gentlemen.
Anytime. Thank you.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining me for another episode of the Speak the Truth podcast. Special thanks to Chuck Holden and Daron Kedar. You guys, go look them up. They're good people. They're good friends to have. Peace, love, happiness, and God bless, ladies and gentlemen. I'm out of here.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.